This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. It's Tuesday, January 14th. I'm Ilya Marritz, filling in for Brian Lehrer. Here's a new development in the Ukraine affair that broke last night concerning something that happened back in November. As the House of Representatives was holding hearings, there were all those televised testimonies from career diplomats who were concerned that the White House had withheld military aid in order to press the Ukrainians to investigate Burisma, the energy company that Hunter Biden sat on the board of. Well, now the New York Times and the Washington Post are reporting that in the midst of those very hearings, someone was looking into Burisma, and it was the Russians. According to Area One, a California-based cybersecurity company, the GRU, the Russian intelligence agency, launched a campaign to hack Burisma during the hearings. The Area One report doesn't provide a lot of detail, but it does note that the GRU's efforts were, quote, successful. Another development pertinent to impeachment yesterday, the House Intelligence Committee is now in possession of Lev Parnas's cell phone. Parnas, of course, is that Ukrainian-American businessman and associate of Rudy Giuliani who was indicted on charges of election meddling. His lawyer has been trying for a few weeks to get information over to the House Intelligence Committee. He wants House investigators to invite his client Lev Parnas to testify. And from call records released in the course of the House inquiry, we know that Parnas and Giuliani were in frequent contact. So what else might be on that phone? Lastly, this morning, Democratic members of the House filed into a meeting with their leader, Nancy Pelosi. The Washington Post reports that during the meeting, she did not name her picks for impeachment managers to argue for removal in the Senate trial, but she did say there would be a vote tomorrow on those as yet unnamed representatives. Plenty to digest, and joining me now is Quinta Jurisic, managing editor of Lawfare. She has a new article out in The Atlantic as well, predicting that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is aiming to make the Senate trial boring by design. Quinta, thank you so much for being here. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So before we get to your Atlantic piece, I want to start with those headlines. First of all, what do you make of this news about Russia hacking Burisma in the midst of the impeachment hearings in the House?
So I want to be careful about what I say, because as you kind of hinted, there is some lack of clarity around what particularly the GRU may have obtained, if it obtained anything at all. As you say, the Area One report says the efforts were successful, but it doesn't really say what success means. So with that on the table, I think this, you know, it looks like a potential repeat of 2016 playing out with 2020. What we saw in terms of Trump's efforts to apparently push Ukraine to provide negative information on a potential general election challenger, Joe Biden, really has always seemed to me like an effort by Trump to kind of reproduce the conditions that helped him win the 2016 election, where the press was constantly reporting on new information contained in Hillary Clinton's emails and the emails of her campaign staff, which, of course, were hacked and then released by the Russian government. And now it seems that the GRU, Russian military intelligence, may be trying to help Trump with that effort, poking around for possible derogatory information in this Ukrainian energy company on whose board Hunter Biden sat.
Right. And just to be clear, from what we understand, Vice President Joe Biden does not appear to have intervened to help Burisma in any way, quite the contrary. But I suppose it would be possible that hackers could still turn up messages or documents or information that, if they were released and packaged in the right way, could still sort of look incriminating to Hunter Biden, or in some way kind of damage those who say that the vice president acted correctly. And that, anyway, why are we talking about this? We should be talking about the Trump administration and the way they tried to leverage Ukraine.
That's exactly right. As you say, there's no evidence that Joe Biden did anything wrong here. But the conversation in the United States about Hunter Biden at this point has been so kind of warped, frankly, by the falsehoods that the president has been putting out that I think, you know, you can imagine hypothetically, say, that Russian intelligence were successful in obtaining some kind of emails that may not even be bad, you know, might just any email read out of context can mean a lot of different things, that, you know, if those are put out sort of into the media space, could be seized on by the president as, you know, look, this is hard evidence of terrible wrongdoing by Hunter Biden, even if it shows nothing of the sort, because frankly, that's what he's already been doing without any additional information.
Right. So let's pivot now to Lev Parnas, because this is, to me, kind of the big curveball of the whole thing right now, which is one of the four men who's facing trial in the Southern District of New York, Lev Parnas, seems to really want to work with the government around this impeachment inquiry. The charges he faces on trial are sort of somewhat related to the subject of the impeachment inquiry, but also kind of separate. It's a campaign campaign finance, campaign interference charge. Parnas is now starting to turn over records to the House. What does that mean, especially given the fact that really the action is shifting from the House to the Senate in impeachment?
There are two questions here. I think one is, as you say, what does this mean for the impeachment inquiry? And then the other is sort of, what does this mean for Lev Parnas? For the impeachment inquiry, I think it's an open question. It is noteworthy that Parnas's lawyer has really been pushing for him to kind of take center stage in the House inquiry. He's been tweeting. He has a hashtag, which is hashtag let Lev speak, that he sort of really seems to want to position his client as someone who's capable of kind of breaking the whole case wide open. The counterpoint is that the House Intelligence Committee just frankly hasn't seemed that interested. They haven't really bitten on any of these suggestions. That suggests to me a couple things. One might be that, frankly, they wanted to keep impeachment moving, right? And they didn't want to hold things up. And as part of that, that may indicate that they felt that they didn't really need this additional information from Parnas to make the case, that they already had enough damning material from Giuliani's public statements, from all the testimony of the various witnesses, from the text messages turned over by Kurt Volker, the former special representative in Ukraine, that they just didn't need Parnas. Now, though, I think Parnas is, I would read what his defense counsel is doing as perhaps trying to kind of play the Michael Cohen card, right? And say, look, I know, you know, I've been indicted. You may think very poorly of me because of what I'm alleged to have done, but let me redeem myself, right? Let me show you that I'm actually a good guy, and sort of positioning his client in a better light.
Which would presumably require complete cooperation, right? It would mean sharing everything that every kind of investigator wants to look at and giving testimony and like coming fully clean. Like, he wouldn't be able to be selective and still redeem himself, would he?
Well, it depends what actor you're thinking of, right? So in terms of Congress, they might be happy to just say, you know, we'll take this information from you and that's sort of all we need. In the case of the prosecutors who are considering Parnas's case, they may not be so forgiving and may push harder to get more from him.
Uh-huh. He has pleaded not guilty and said he will fight the charges, which include, illegal campaign contributions. It includes bringing Russian money into the American political system. I mean, it's very serious stuff and very interesting and intriguing stuff. Does he risk, if he really still intends to fight those charges, could he damage himself by cooperating with Congress?
That's an interesting question, and I confess I'm not actually sure, just because I think it would depend on, you know, the procedural posture of the case. I will say he does seem to be playing a very odd game here, right? I mean, I compared him to Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, of course, pleaded guilty and so was in a different position. I do think that this depends not only on how prosecutors handle Parnas's case, but also how the House Intelligence Committee wants to investigate going forward. Of course, impeachment will be going to the Senate, as we've discussed, but that doesn't mean that the House will stop investigating. And so you could imagine, perhaps, if the House Intelligence Committee keeps investigating the Ukraine matter, that they may find use for the material that Parnas has put forward. But again, that's not the same thing as the prosecutor smiling on him.
One more question on Lev Parnas, and this is something that's kind of intrigued me for a while. You mentioned his lawyer, Joseph Bondi, who has been really active on Twitter around the hashtag Let Lev Speak. I've seen him in court. He cuts kind of a colorful figure. And his background is entirely in marijuana law, from what I can tell, sort of, you know, cases concerning marijuana businesses, marijuana proprietors. It's kind of this emerging area as more and more states legalize or partially legalize. And that, to me, makes a really noteworthy contrast with Michael Cohen, where he had, you know, former high-level prosecutors, people from big firms. Lev Parnas has chosen to go with a really different kind of a lawyer. Does that tell us something?
Well, I think I would just say that it is an advantage to everyone in these high-profile cases, and frankly, in any case, for everyone to be well-represented, right? The system works best when defendants have good lawyers, and so I don't want to speak to whatever personal decisions Lev Parnas might have made, but definitely the fact that his counsel doesn't have a background in high-profile criminal cases may mean that we should look differently on some of the strategic decisions that he's making.
All right, so let's turn now to the action or inaction, I suppose, in the House and Senate, because we seem to be kind of in a holding pattern. And you have written that any trial in the Senate is likely to be limited to the substance of what was already surfaced in the House's impeachment probe. And I think that's really interesting because, as we've been talking about for the past few minutes, news keeps sort of overtaking the stuff that was surfaced those many weeks ago. So how do you see this playing out?
Exactly. So the real problem here is that Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has been pretty clear he really doesn't want to have to hear from witnesses at the Senate trial if he doesn't have to. It's been sort of up in the air in recent days whether he'll be able to keep enough control over his Republican caucus to make that happen. There's some indication that Republican Senator Susan Collins is working with a group of other senators, so she says, to hear from witnesses. So if there are at least four Republicans who are able to kind of break off and say, actually, we'd really like to hear from a certain witness, then we could have new information presented in the Senate trial. That said, if McConnell is able to keep his caucus together, we could end up seeing something that looks a lot different, that basically would look like the House impeachment managers, the members of the House presenting the case, basically making their arguments in favor for why the president should be convicted by the Senate, then the president's defense team making their argument, and the Senate kind of making up its mind there, just on the strength of the material that's already been presented. I certainly wouldn't argue that that is the best way to do it by any means, but that's sort of the vision of the trial that Mitch McConnell has sketched out.
Let's take a phone call. Asher is on the phone in Croton on Hudson. Asher, you're on WNYC. What's your question?
Yes, thank you very much. Well, you were just hitting on the point that I wanted to bring up, because there's a real inconsistency in what Nancy Pelosi has done. If the House had subpoenaed, I think, Mulvaney and his people more important than Bolton, that would make sense. But having not done so, I think that it undermines their case by not just going ahead with the evidence that they've already presented. I mean, develop. If they felt that was strong enough to vote on impeachment, then they should go ahead with McConnell's concept, present their case, which really is strong.
Right. It's a really interesting tension here that the House faces between, as the caller says, wanting to gather as much information as possible, you know, subpoenaing witnesses, subpoenaing former National Security Advisor John Bolton, Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, who both seem to have information on the Ukraine matter, versus pushing impeachment forward on a speedy timeframe. The thing about those subpoenas is that those would take a long time. You would have to litigate them, possibly even all the way up to the Supreme Court, and that will take a while. And so it seems to me that the House sort of made a calculation. We have the information that we need as a baseline to make this case, and we want to keep this moving forward, and we don't want the delay that we might have if we had to go to the courts. We can debate whether that was the right call, but I think that that issue of timing was probably at the forefront of their mind.
And Asher, thanks for your call. So let's say that things play out somewhat in the way that you have sketched out, so that the Senate trial begins soon. They don't call witnesses. It's a little bit of a non-event. And the president is acquitted. I don't know if that's the correct term. The president is not removed from office. Then what? What are the avenues to continue the inquiry? Because information keeps spinning out. There's a lot to look into here. A bunch of good government groups have obtained really interesting email correspondence and other documents, even just in the short time since the House Intelligence Committee concluded their portion of the proceeding. So does the House take this up again, just not as an impeachment matter? Is that possible?
They certainly can. There's nothing that would prevent them from continuing to investigate. And I would certainly argue, as you say, more and more information is coming out there, that there just seems to be an abundant amount of different avenues to kind of dig into, keep pushing, see what the House Intelligence Committee can dig up. I would also say, honestly, there is no prohibition against impeaching a president twice. That may seem kind of far-fetched, but you could imagine a situation in which the House uncovers some other instance of egregious wrongdoing by the president that they think really rises to the level of being a high crime. They could hold another impeachment vote and pass that to the Senate, too. I don't think that's likely. I kind of doubt Nancy Pelosi would want to do that. But just because you've played the card of impeachment doesn't mean you have to stop investigating and stop pushing to hold the president accountable.
Quinta, you have talked and written a bunch about this idea of a boring impeachment trial, or a predictable impeachment trial, perhaps. And you actually wrote, this isn't the first time an impeachment trial has been boring. In fact, boring is the American impeachment trial tradition. The 1999 Senate trial of Bill Clinton, despite being about sex, was incredibly dull. Now, I must confess, I was a senior in college at the time. I was barely paying attention. Bill Clinton's impeachment trial was dull. Is that your memory?
Well, I can't speak to my own memory because I was a little too young to be paying attention then. But so what my co-author Benjamin Wittes and I have written is the Clinton trial was not very interesting. There was a lot of presentation of evidence. There was a lot of senators sort of sitting quietly and hearing people lay things out. I actually discovered in some of my research that a lot of the writing about the Clinton impeachment trial discussing how boring it was pointed back to historical work about the Andrew Johnson impeachment trial that also wrote about how boring it was. So in the same way that I'm saying now the Trump impeachment trial will be boring like the Clinton impeachment trial was boring, folks during the Clinton impeachment were saying the Clinton impeachment is boring like the Johnson impeachment was boring. I mean, in the Johnson impeachment, Anthony Trollope, the British novelist who was viewing the trial, reportedly actually fell asleep during one of the arguments. So that's how dull it was.
Oh my goodness. How did you learn that?
It was written about in the press at the time. People thought it was pretty hilarious.
Remarkable. So if there is going to be a boring trial, what are your tips for making it interesting? As a viewer at home, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a great way of putting it. I think the big question in my mind, the big thing to keep an eye on is John Bolton. Whether John Bolton will testify, and if he does testify, what he says. He is the real wild card here. He's indicated that he, if called by the Senate to testify, that he will come. So that may put pressure on Republican senators like Susan Collins, say, Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski, to vote in favor of bringing him in. And then he's just a wild card because, you know, he's not on the president's side, and he's not on the side of the House, primarily Democrats, who impeached the president either. He's sort of on his own side. And so the question of what story he decides to tell will be a really interesting and counterintuitive one. And in my mind, that's the kind of big dramatic tension here.
In fact, it makes this whole sort of high stakes game of probabilities seem even higher stakes. I feel like Dr. Fiona Hill gave us one view of Bolton when she described working with him closely on the National Security Council. And I think a lot of people read into that what they wanted to think that he was going to say. I certainly remember when he created his Twitter account, he seemed to speak from a different voice from the one that I had been imagining.
Right. So he was tweeting, saying sort of stay tuned. He used the hashtag John Bolton. So there's definitely, he is vulnerable to the accusation that he's doing this for attention.
Nobody should learn how to tweet like totally in public, like do it before you're famous.
Exactly. And so he does have a book coming out, right? So there's kind of this question of how much new information would he give in a Senate trial versus how much is in the book. The New York Times reported that according to Bolton's associates, some of the information he has to give would be damning for the president. On the other hand, Senator John Cornyn, who may have just been speculating, I don't know, said recently that he thought that Bolton could be exonerating for the president. So it really depends on precisely what game Bolton thinks he's playing, and I don't think any of us really know what that is.
And we will have to leave it there with Quinta Jurisic. She is the managing editor of Lawfare. Quinta, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Listeners, if you have impeachment questions, you can call them in and leave a voicemail. You might get to hear it on the show and get an answer from our guests. Call and leave a message. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from WNYC's live daily news talk show, The Brian Lehrer Show, which we also encourage you to listen to every day from 10 a.m. to noon. You can stream it live at WNYC.org. I'm Ilya Meritz, filling in for Brian. Thanks for listening, and as always, we'll have more tomorrow.